A magus, or magi for plural, was a Zoroastrian astrologer priest from ancient Persia, or modern Iran, from which we get the term magic and magician. In Western mythology, they have been referred to as sorcerers and wizards or shamans. In Farsi, the Indo-European or Aryan language spoken in Iran, magi was the original term for fire worshipper. They were the guardians of the sacred and eternal fire, or a flame or altar fire, which remains lit inside their temple 24 hours a day for millennia.
This Zoroastrian fire temple in Yazd is a place of worship and increasingly a popular tourist destination. It's home to the Atash Beram, the fire of victory, which has burned for over 1,500 years, a centerpiece of the world's oldest monotheistic religion.
The ancient Chaldeans regarded fire and the sun itself as symbolic for spiritual light. These enigmatic people lived in Mesopotamia around 800 BC and ruled Babylon from 625 to 539 BC. They were always renowned as ancient astronomers and highly respected astrologers. So for now, let us briefly examine some of their celestial mysteries, which may still have a covert, hidden, or forgotten influence over us today. The planets can be distinguished from all other stars in the sky because they change their position slightly against the background stars from one night to the next, and their brightness varies in a regular cycle over a period of time. Where all other points of light seem to move together in a fixed position in relation to each other, there are five visible planets that can be observed and followed from Earth using the naked eye, which move independently and seem to wander around on their own. The ancient Greeks referred to them as planetes asteris, which means wandering stars, and is from where the word planet is derived. So in addition to the five celestial wanderers or planets, we have the sun and the moon, which obviously also move independently and seemingly do their own thing in respect to the other fixed stars, which gives us a grand total of seven. Thus, these seven came to be known as the seven old gods of the Babylonians: Shamash the sun, Sin the moon, Nebo was Mercury, Ishtar was Venus, Nergal was Mars, Marduk was Jupiter, and E was Saturn. To the Hebrews, they were the archangels: Michael, Gabriel, Raphael, Samuel, Uriel, Amiel, Zadkiel. To the early Christians, they were the angels of the seven churches. They were represented among the Jews, Babylonians, Egyptians, and Persians by the seven-branched candlesticks known as the menorah, or their seven-flamed altar fires. Our days of the week were named after the planets of Hellenistic astrology, and by Hellenistic I mean relating to Greek or Macedonian history, from the death of Alexander the Great in 323 BC to the defeat of Cleopatra and Mark Antony by Octavian in 31 BC. So during this period, Greek culture flourished, and we can see the seven-day week spread throughout the Roman Empire. Mars was Aries, Mercury, Hermes, Jupiter was Zeus, Venus was Aphrodite, and Saturn is Cronos, and of course the sun and the moon. Where the sun and fire symbolically represented spiritual light, the seven planetary deities also had an esoteric occult significance. Calendars and cycles of time were very important for things like agriculture and navigation, but there was another equally practical aspect to astrotheology, which definitely falls into the realm of internal alchemy, or let's call it spirituality, which is the true secret of all the solar mysteries, without exception. In the words of occultist Manly P. Hall, honorary 33rd degree Freemason,
"We begin our problem this evening with the problem or study of the seven deities, or as Plutarch refers to the mystery, the seven rayed god. Why was the seven so vastly significant a number in ancient times? How does it happen that this number coincides with what the ancients called their planets, consisting of five planets we know today and two luminaries? These seven bodies in peculiarly close relationship to the earth and appearing to move around it have for the longest period that we know been highly symbolical and highly significant in relation to theology. These seven wanderers, these seven planets, by the Egyptians, by the Persians, the Hindus, the Chinese, the Greeks, and many other peoples, particularly perhaps even the Babylonians, these seven planets were always identified with seven deities. These seven deities, in all these different groups, divided and organized themselves in practically the same patterns. And the powers of these deities, regardless of the names by which they were known, were identical. Thus the number seven comes to us with a tremendous and almost awe-inspiring pressure of validity. But we also know that in the Buddhist doctrine, there were seven primary Buddhistic powers. These seven, the great eternal bodhisattvas, are never represented, however, in their fullness. We have only five. We have the mention of seven Dhyana Buddhas, but we only have pictorial presentation of five, arranged in the form of a hollow square with the fifth in the center. Now the Greeks had the same subterfuge of using five and two in a very strange combination. Philo Judaeus tells us that the seven planetary gods were the vowels, or the seven powers of sound. Is it not interesting, therefore, that we are still having trouble with our seven vowels? We only recognize five. And we have a funny old doggerel verse that has been used in school for a long time. The vowels are A, E, I, O, and U, sometimes W and Y. We've never been able to quite arrange this W and Y situation. We have, however, the five vowels that we know. So this five again appears. And wherever this five appears, it has been tied to the planetary mystery. From the earliest studies of numerology, back in the classical period when folks really took it seriously, and which at the time when it was applied directly to certain classic alphabets, and this is important because in ancient times men paginated and numeralized by means of letters, which we no longer do. Therefore, pages were lettered instead of numbered. And every letter had its numerical equivalent, unvarying. We do not have this in English. But according to Pythagoras, the number seven was the number of law. It was the number of the universe. It was the number of the gods and of the immutable principles which lie at the root of existence. Irenaeus tells us that one of the old Gnostic symbols of Christ showed the head of the Savior surrounded by a halo of seven rays. These rays, assumedly, representing the seven powers, the messianic dispensation. We learn in the book of Revelation of seven churches which are in Asia. And these, of course, carry very closely to the seven chakras of the tantric Vedantic system in India. And the moment we go into the problem of the seven chakras, we come again into the 5-7 difficulty. Because our systems in Asia break up, some systems insisting that there are only five of these centers, and the other systems representing five developed out of seven and two in potential. So we come back to this strange number again. And this number constantly fights the struggle between the five planets and the seven members of the solar system anciently known and recognized. In the ancient Kabbalah, the creating fiat, or word, was spoken in the form of the seven vowels, two of which, again, were mystery vowels, or secret letters, which could not be known, and for the deficiency of which, the great name could not be restored, captured, or preserved. In the Jewish early works in Genesis, we find in the opening chapters the Elohim. And the Elohim are the seven creating powers of the great deity who is said to have fashioned the world in the opening chapters of Genesis. These are the spirits of God that moved upon the face of the deep. Their number was identical with that of the Harmonian artificers of Egypt. They were the powers or creating attributes released by the speaking of the word of creation. And this word was always a word composed of vowels. So we go back to the mystery of the 5-7 vowels. All these things point to some kind of a doctrine, which frankly and obviously is very difficult to trace after so long a time, but it meant something and had a very clear and definite bearing upon the entire structure of the universal organization as it was known to the ancients. Pythagoras, in defining this mystery of the seven, goes on to relate it to the seven powers of universal generation. And in explaining this, he tells us, and Plato later corroborates him, that the soul was a numerical mystery patterned in the geometry of seven. That the soul of man actually consisted of seven parts and an eighth sphere. Now this eighth sphere also arises in the ancient religious doctrine. The eighth sphere appears in the Gnosis, and in the recent discovery of Gnostic books in Egypt, probably the most important religious find in the modern world, far more important than the Dead Sea Scrolls. Found these books, incidentally, were found earlier, slightly earlier than the Dead Sea Scrolls, but are not as well known. In this Gnostic collection, we have a very great deal of information bearing upon the esoteric use of numbers and of the various deities and principles that are represented by them. Now, if you go back to Revelation for a moment, you will come to the seven lamps and the great figure that moves among them. And we know that in the tabernacle and temple rites of the old Jews, the seven-branched candlestick is the symbol of the seven planets.
An occult explanation can be found for the 12 months of the year, which at one point were 10 months, and they were extended to 12. This is why October is the 10th month of the year in the modern-day Gregorian calendar. The month kept its original name from octo, which means eight in Latin. An octagon has eight sides, an octopus has eight tentacles, but October is now the 10th month. And December, which means 10, the prefix DEC means 10, became the 12th month. The number 12 has had a significant occult meaning in various cultures throughout the world, and one reason is the lunar cycle, the cycle of the moon, which is often symbolically linked to the 12-month menstrual cycle, almost universally tied into the lunar symbology since the Pleistocene or Ice Age. It is clear that women were not always so disrespected as they are today, and this cycle was at one time very, very sacred and revered, where in modern times it's labeled as unclean and basically taboo. 12 represents the division or fractioning of unity into 12 parts. An ancient civilization, which likely spanned the entire globe, wanted to make sure a connection to this divine number was never lost. We can see the 12 labors of Hercules, 12 sons of Romulus, 12 knights of King Arthur's Round Table, 12 followers of Buddha, 12 followers of Quetzalcoatl, 12 tribes of Israel. We read about the 12 brothers of Joseph, the 12 great patriarchs, 12 disciples of Christ. The tree of life bears 12 fruits. And even Himmler and his 12 knights in the Nazi SS. So it's clear there's occult significance. 12 inches in a foot, 12 days of Christmas, 12 grades in school, and of course, the three important cycles of the day, year, and great year, which have the day and night divided into 12 hours, the 12 months of the solar year, and 12 zodiac ages of the great processional year, respectively. So let's consult Manly P. Hall again and see what kind of insight he can shed on this.
Now, in Greek mythology, there was a group called the Titans. And the Titans are the ones who stole Dionysus, or Zagreus, the son of Zeus, took him out into the fields of space, killed him, boiled his body, and ate the flesh. And when this occurred, Zeus, becoming aware of the smell of the fire in which they were cooking the body of his son, turned his attention, his one eye, which, like the eye of Oton, was the eye that saw all, turned this eye upon the Titans in chaos, perceived their crime, and launched his thunderbolt upon them, in which he destroyed the 12 primordial forces. He then took the ashes of these forces, containing within these ashes the burned blood of his own son, and from these ashes formed the bodies of mankind. Therefore, man contained within himself the 12 titanic principles, and the blood of Bacchus. And the sacraments and ceremonies relating to this are part of the Greek mystery of the Eucharist. Now, in this situation, the Titans, astrologically and astrotheologically, represent the primordial power of the 12 constellations. This term, precession of the equinoxes, to one completely unfamiliar with the subject, is just a little difficult to explain briefly. Each year, the sun reaches the equinox slightly sooner than the year before. That actually, the coming of the sun is a little over 1 minute earlier each year, making an astronomical degree in about 72 years. Thus, every 72 years, the sun seems to drop back at the equinox 1 degree. If it so does, it drops back approximately 30 degrees every 2160 years. And it drops back around the entire circle to any hypothetical point in one longer cycle of 25,920 years. In this period of time, the sun seems, only by appearance, seems to drop back around the entire circle of the zodiac, falling or falling backward or failing backward at the degree of the rate of 1 degree every 72 years. This has been a very important time pattern, and the complete precession of the equinoxes, requiring 25,920 years, is referred to as the Great Platonic Year. And this peculiar heavenly motion has significance in a very wonderful way, and is perhaps the most important link that we have between astronomy and religion in ancient times. The precession of the equinox, therefore, means that every 2160 years, the sun reaches the equinoctial point in a different sign of the zodiac, each sign constituting 30 degrees. If this occurs, then, we see the appearance of the precession, in which the sun appears to enter each sign in its last degree, and by precession, move backward through it to its first degree, and then pass into the next sign, entering that at its last degree, and moving back to the first. This peculiar observation, the study of the Platonic year, has led to a great many wonderful symbols and philosophies. The first stargazers on their tall towers or ziggurats in the land of Babylon, these stargazers were astronomer priests. There was no differentiation between science and religion.
My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an author and anthropologist, and would like to invite you to join me in awakening from a long amnesia. Species with amnesia, our forgotten history. Gods with amnesia, subterranean worlds of inner earth. The occult secrets of Vril. And 1666, redemption through sin. I would like to thank my subscribers who share my posts, as I rely on word of mouth, and I appreciate all of the positive feedback, reviews on my books, and I thank you very much for listening.